mixed martial arts and boxing fans. It's time for Fighter's Fury, Inside the Heart of a Champion, with your hosts, Brendan Tobin, Seema, and Tommy Guns. It's time for Fighter's Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
And good morning, South Florida. It's Fighter's Fury here on 790, The Ticket. Tobin here with you for the next hour. We'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. Big focus, of course, today being on UFC 235. Huge pay-per-view last night from Las Vegas. As you had two titles on the line, you had John Bones Jones defending his light heavyweight title against Anthony Smith, and you had Tyron Woodley defending his belt against Kamaru Usman, and it was a fun night. Very interesting night of fights. A lot of stuff going down, a lot of unexpected results, a lot of controversy. It had a little bit of everything. It was a really interesting night. Like, you know, I don't know if we'll look back at it and say it was like the most thrilling night of fights, but I thought it was just a very important night. I thought that there was a lot of things that were interesting to run down. And so let's get into it. So last night, we will start with the main event, and that was John Jones. He was defending his belt against Anthony Smith, who has had a resurgence at light heavyweight. And of course, John Jones, a pretty quick turnaround for him, which is nice to see because look, this has been a guy who's been out of the octagon a plenty because of steroid tests or suspensions or all that stuff. So to see the best to ever do it go out there and do it frequently was great to see. And really, really great performance by him yesterday. He threw everything at Anthony Smith. Anthony Smith, you know, outside of the first round, hanging with a head kick and a couple right hands that even cut up John Jones. You know, John systematically breaks you down. He throws everything at you. Anthony Smith was finding, as that fight went on, the safest place where he could take the least damage. And John was dominant. He was great in every facet of it. I think he did a great job with his kicks. He hit him with his body kick in the first round that I thought it made Anthony Smith question a lot of stuff going forward. And, you know, afterwards, Anthony was talking about the fact that, you know, he felt nullified. He felt like he didn't get beat. And I think that is one of those things when you're a guy like Anthony Smith and you're a guy who throws everything out there. You know, you think about the Volkan Oezdemir fight where it's bloody. It's a lot of chaos. It feels like a real war in there. And with John Jones, it's just like you're sitting there and you're like, how come I can't inflict the damage on this guy like I inflict on everybody else? But that's kind of the masterpiece that is John Jones as a fighter. You don't go in there and do the things that you typically do. And I think that's true of a lot of great fighters, that they go and they take away the thing that you're best at and then they exploit you little by little. You know, John Jones isn't going out there and he's not bulldozing guys and he's not throwing just massive haymaking shots that are going to end you. Every once in a while, he finds crazy finishes. Every once in a while with John Jones, you're going to have something. He typically will go in there and fight and throw stuff out there that you don't normally see, but normally it's a systematic breakdown like it was against Gustafson, you know, like it normally is. That's how he goes about there. When he was in his run, when he was the guy at 23 years old, 24 years old, and, you know, he was wrecking the legends of this sport, when he was wrecking Vitor Belfort and he was wrecking Lyoto Machida and he was beating up Rampage Jackson. That guy, you know, he's not necessarily that, but I mean, none of these guys go in there and look even close to him. The only guy we've really seen look close to him was Gustafson the first time around, and John kind of proved his point there, did he not? And this was another guy, Anthony Smith, who was a big dude. You know, that was one of the things that I didn't realize until they actually got in the cage. Anthony Smith's a big guy. He's 6'4", but, you know, Joe Rogan mentioned this one thing during the fight where he's like, man, how is there such a reach discrepancy between these two? Because John's got like a good 8 inches of him on reach. And I could tell you, like, out of a lot of athletes that I've gotten to interact with or just get to size up, I just remember meeting John Jones, and I met him a few Super Bowls back. It was the one at Super Bowl in New York, and he was on Radio Row. And so he came over and he did an interview with me. I've gotten to talk to him a few times, but that was the only time in person I got to talk to him. And, dude, the hand is just like, it's like extraterrestrial. It's like you're shaking hands with something that's not the same as you. And it's not like he's the most massive guy you've ever seen, and it's not like it's overwhelming by his size, but you're just like, his parts are different. And that goes in part of the package. Like, he is so fit perfectly for this division, 205 pounds, and is more efficient at that weight than anybody else. And ultimately, when we talk about the matchup, you know, his best rival of all time is Daniel Cormier, as far as the personal hatred and the best business they do. But the thing that Cormier is always going to have to do is he's always going to have to put himself in the buzzsaw of trying to get inside on Jon Jones. And at the end of the day, you know, Daniel Cormier is 5'9 on a good day, and Jon Jones is 6'4. So that's a big difference. And we even saw it yesterday with Anthony Smith, who is 6'4, but what could he do? He was getting butchered up. He was getting hit in the shin, hit at the foot, hit at the knee, hit at the body. You know, it takes so much for him just to hit one right hand on Jon Jones, and that is the masterpiece that you have to put so much effort to get to him, but he's so good at hitting you all over the place with everything that he's got, and what do you do? Like, that's kind of just like Anthony Smith, and it's no rip on his corner, but they're just like, come on, Anthony. You know, you've seen it. This was his corner kept saying this. You've seen everything he's got. And it's like, yeah, and it hurts, and I can't get through it, and there's no answer for it. You know, so his corner just kept saying that, you got to be offensive. You've seen everything he's got, but the problem is, John's got everything. This isn't like, hey, you've seen everything he's got. You've seen that monster right hand. Go at him. You know? Avoid that. Let's get in there. It's like, all right, well, he'll throw up my knees. He'll throw up my shins. He'll stomp at my feet. He'll go at my body. He'll throw elbows. He'll throw spinning elbows. He'll throw punches. He'll throw everything at you. So, yes, you've seen everything he got. But because he's got everything, how the hell do you get in there if you're Anthony Smith? And that's the masterpiece that is Jon Jones. That's why he's the best to ever do it in the octagon. That's why he is the guy who's reigned as long as he has. And if it wasn't for all the stuff outside, that belt would have never left his waist. And he'd you know, be on an incredible streak, even longer than what he's on right now. Or his win totals would be even higher than they are right now. I don't know who beats him. I don't, you know, they're talking about afterwards Thiago Santos, who's a fun fighter, the sledgehammer. He's been very, very impressive on this ride back. And yeah, he maybe has that devastating power, but Anthony Smith ain't no slouch with the power either. So, you know, I don't know where Thiago Santos goes and finds the victory, because Jon Jones will find a way to keep you away from him and yet deliver his punishment. So it's a fun fight. I'm excited about it. I'm glad John's kind of on this run of reestablishing his domination at 205 pounds and being the undisputed light heavyweight champion of the world. But when it comes down to it, who the hell is going to stop this guy at this weight class? It's so impressive. And, you know, for people yesterday, it was like, boring, not great. It's like, well, there's been a lot of great champions in both boxing and mixed martial arts who aren't the most exciting. To me, he ain't one of those guys where I just like, I'm fascinated watching him go out there and do work the way he does, because there's so many questions when he goes in there. People are like, well, is this fight against Gustafsson? Like, this is the height. Is this going to be the one where he can break it down? A guy who's maybe a little bit better of a boxer than him, and spun that on its head and finished the guy. Anthony Smith, a guy who was just a wrecking machine, almost a zombie. You know, Anthony Smith is sitting there and he's saying, well, I felt nullified. It's like, you're Lionheart. You're not supposed to be nullified. You're supposed to throw all caution to the wind and destroy folks. But we said this when it came to Anthony Smith's rise. It's nothing against Anthony Smith. Dude's been doing it forever. He's an absolute monster. But his great accomplishments to get to this point were beating guys that John was beating 8 years ago in their prime. He was beating Rashad Evans. He was beating Shogun to win the title. So, it's like, all right, he's beaten guys, and those were big accomplishments and great for Anthony Smith, but does he really have anything new for Jon Jones? Apparently not. So a good performance for John. He continues his dominance at 205 pounds. And who knows when we'll see him back in there. Hopefully it's soon. Like this says, he wants to fight 3-4 times this year. So I'd say probably summertime we'd see him fight Thiago Santos. There was some talk about him fighting Brock Lesnar. Some questions about that. Dana was asked, why don't you want to make the John Jones Brock Lesnar fight? And there were a couple of things that he said. He said, one, that Brock is obligated to WWE right now, and because of that, he's not eligible to fight. And that Brock hasn't called him. That Brock calls him when he's ready to fight. And the other thing is, Dana promised that fight to Daniel Cormier. Daniel Cormier is retiring, and so if Brock's going to come back, he's probably going to go against Dana. And I got to say, like, if you're Brock Lesnar and you want to make a return, I'm sure you want to win, who would you rather fight? And I'm saying, like, I don't think he's going to beat – I don't think he could beat either Jon Jones or Daniel Cormier. But if you have to choose, how the hell do you want to fight Jon Jones over Daniel Cormier? Like, it's not possible. I guess just from a business standpoint, I think that's more – that's definitely commercially a bigger business draw. But as far as, like, if it's Brock Lesnar in the driver's seat, hey, who do you want to fight, Jon Jones or Daniel Cormier? Both of his returns are probably going to do pretty fantastic on the open market. I got to think that he wants to fight DC over John Bones Jones. But it's a fun fight either way. Oh, I should mention this. So there's this one point of controversy that we had in the fourth round. John's beating the holy hell out of Anthony Smith, and the fight is in the midst of a huge rout. And he hits him with an illegal knee. And it was pretty clear. It was actually funny because they started the night saying, like, the Nevada State Athletic Commission has these hybrid rules. And they are doing the new scoring system, you know, more, what's the word I'm looking for? Easier to get 10-8 rounds, more lenient on 10-8 rounds is what I should say. And the other big thing, they have instant replay, which you could use in the middle of a fight, not just when a fight is finished. And they have the old grounded opponent rule, so 3 points down. So John hits Anthony Smith with an illegal knee. Herb Dean stops the fight, and it was actually after the point where he almost hit him with an illegal kick as well. So John's going a little bit hog wild in this round. He's dominating it. So they get to the point of the fight where they have to stop the fight. They look at replay. It's clearly, it looks pretty intentional. Like, from the standpoint of, it's not like he wanted to blast him because he was a grounded opponent, but it was just ignoring the rules. Like, he thought that Smith's hand was up, and it wasn't. And so he blasts him in the head with a knee. And so we're thinking to ourselves, man, like, John is cruising to a victory. There's no shot that Anthony Smith is going to pull out any miracle at this point. And all John has to do is basically run out the clock. And so there's this moment where you're like, man, is Anthony Smith? Now, I didn't know this. I didn't know that the title can change hands. I thought this was like WWE. I thought, like, disqualification, champ keeps the belt. But apparently, Anthony Smith, if he would have gone through and said, I couldn't continue, it's very likely ending in John getting disqualified. Second time in his career where that happened. And we have a new champion. John would have lost the belt. So that would have been crazy. I don't know if Anthony Smith knew all that. I don't know if that was going through, if anybody from his corner was shouting, hey, you're the champ if you do this. But he said no. He said he was fine. Definitely did the honorable thing if you're a sports fan and you're watching how that fight would have gone. Anthony Smith didn't take the easy way out, and I think he put it afterwards. He's like, I want to win the belt. I don't want to steal it. So that's a dude of high character. He's like that kid in the commercials you watch during the Heat games who admitted to his coach that he touched the ball out of bounds. Most coaches would have thrown that kid off his team. But that coach tried to teach a life lesson, so props to that coach. So Anthony Smith, he is that kid, and he could have been champion today, but he's not. He decided to do the honorable thing, and John Bones Jones remains your champion, and it looks like he is going to be fighting Thiago Santos next. When we come back, we'll get into the co-main event and the rest of the card. Kamaru Usman is your new welterweight champion of the world, and he's already got his next opponent lined up. We'll get to that next on Fighters Fury.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
All right, welcome back, guys. Fighters Fury here on the ticket with you. We'll continue our recap with UFC 235. One title did change hands yesterday. Kamaru Usman is your new welterweight champion. And I think I'll take what this texter says on the accidentlawfirm.com text line. Hey, Tobes, I did not foresee Usman out-wrestling Tyron last night. It was like watching a unicorn moonwalk, just in awe. He was so good, man. I think that's well put by you. Usman was fantastic yesterday. And the wrestling was superb on his from his standpoint. And just everything. Everything. You know, he was able to control everything of that fight. He was able to manhandle Tyron Woodley. He was diverse enough in his strikes to where, you know, he's making Tyron very uncomfortable. He was unleashing. He stayed busy the entire time. This wasn't where he was just laying on him, although, you know, hey, shout out to Mark Goddard. Listen, hey, man, if a guy's throwing a punch, can we not stop it? I'll tell you what, it was a bad night. Piss poor night for officiating last night. Really, really bad. And we'll get to the Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler disgrace in a bit. But, man, Mark Goddard just like in the midst, stay busy, stay busy. He's literally throwing punches on the guy and is saying stay busy. It was a bad night for him. And that's a good referee. You know, look, this can happen to the best of them. I know Mark Goddard is a good official. Herb Dean is a good official, and it's not exactly – there's not many of them in the prime of the sport. Like, that's why the same four guys are refereeing all the fights. So, look, Mark Goddard is normally an official, I think, is very good. But, man, I mean, that dude was like Hulk Hogan, pleasing the crowd. Anytime that a fight was to the ground at all, he was, like, cupping his hand to his ear and saying, you guys want to strike a stand-up fight? Let's go! And is getting those guys going. But, look, I'll tell you this. Look, there was one point where he stood it up, and then Usman beat on Tyron Woodley even worse. He threw everything at him, and he has no holes. Like, I came out of that with the Usman fight, and it's fights like that where you just need to know, all right, what is this guy going to do on the big stage? Is he going to be the same? Is this going to be the same guy that got to the title? What guy is going to show up? And he just looked so prepared. He was so collected in that effort against Tyron Woodley, who I hope everybody gives the proper respect to. Look, this guy, I know people think that he hasn't put forth the most pleasing fights in the world every time out, but he game plans better than a lot of guys in this sport. And I would say, you know, I don't even know if you want to say John game plans better than him. It's just that John has the tools to take everything away. But Tyron really does an outstanding job of taking away your best weapon. The problem with it is here, Kamaru's best weapon is his ability to just dominate you with his wrestling. And there's not really a game plan for that. If a guy can control you up against the cage and can take you down at will, there's not much for game plan there. He was pulling out some home run shots. He was able to hit like one right hand and almost got like one guillotine. And when he didn't get it, that put Kamaru right back on top of him. So Kamaru was almost doing a little bit of what John was doing as far as he was bringing the foot stomps, these nasty, nasty shots to the body. Just always busy, never stopping. He was relentless. He was relentless. And I think we could say with Tyron, he, you know, there's been some fights where you could say he's kept it at a safe distance and he's kept out of somebody's kitchen, but he isn't the most busy. He's definitely not the busiest fighter in the world. Usman was nonstop busy, nonstop with the output on this fight. And the other thing is, you know, Tyron has to get in there with obviously he wants to hit him with that massive bomb of a right hand that he has, because when you look at these two, when we're looking at it on paper, I you know, and we picked Usman last week. I just, you know, I've been become a big fan of the guy in this title run, but he just looked at me and goes, this dude has no weaknesses. And the only thing we say with Tyron doesn't really have weaknesses, and the best thing that he's got there is that massive power shot that he can deliver. But, you know, Usman was delivering this front kick that was establishing the range so much. And so people are like, well, why isn't Usman getting in there? Why isn't he, you know, establishing his hands? Like, Kamaru was just doing just enough on the feet to keep it right where he wanted. And when he wanted to shoot and get Tyron Woodley down. He got him down, man, and hit him with a this brutal elbow that shook Tyron Woodley, and was just a great performance, man. You feel really good for a guy like that, because, you know, with Kamaru there are no gimmicks. This was a guy who also, you know, was in a bit of the outside looking in with management. Dana White ripped him after one fight because he said he beat Emil Meek with, I think I got that guy's name right. The dude looks like a Viking. And he said to him that, he said that, you know, I won that fight at 30%. Dana White's like going, 30%? Why would you say that? And to go from that to his fight against RDA, where he is basically showing you that he is ready to do this over five rounds. It's been such a great climb for him. And you just watch Kamaru Usman and what he did last night to Tyron Woodley, who, look, it's hard to not say that Tyron Woodley is not among the best welterweights of all time. You know, we're coming off a week where George St. Pierre retired, but this is what I was saying with Woodley. You know, it's not only that he did it against guys of his generation with Lawler, Thompson, and Maya, but he was going into this next wave of young killers who were coming for the crown, and Darren Till, Usman, Colby Covington, and all these guys who are atop the division. It's just like, it's so hard to stay on top. Like what you're seeing with John do in the next fight and is going to continue to try to do is, you know, you're not only taking on the guys who are coming up in the sport with you, but you're coming up with the new guys who are learning new stuff, who are learning new tricks, who are hungrier, who are, you know, this is the difference. And, you know, Kamaru knows, like, this, he doesn't have the huge backing. He doesn't have, you know, the greatest mic skills. He doesn't exactly have anything that outside of his fighting is going to get him a title fight other than earning it with wins. And so that's the moment right there, because if he doesn't put forth a good performance against Tyron Woodley while the belt's on the line, who knows if he gets back there? Who knows? And now he does. And I got, like, look, the next fight is him versus Colby Covington, which is a fun fight in that they don't like each other. They've talked a lot of smack as well. Everybody in the division hates Colby. But you got to say this about Colby Covington. Look, he had a lot of heat on him going into his fight with RDA for that interim title. And he also rose to the occasion and put forth a great performance. I know everybody busts on his striking and they think that he sucks and that he is all just gimmick and that he's not on the same class. But when the chips have been on the table lately and he's needed to put forth a performance, he has. So now you got this fight coming up between two guys who don't like each other. And if it makes you, if you want it any juicier, you got yourself the old crosstown rivalry back on it. Hard Knocks 365, American Top Team. They're top contender, your champion, right down here in South Florida, man. This is right here in the backyard. These guys are going to be getting ready for a hell of a title fight, and it's going to be a fun lead up, and I can't wait to see it. I'll tell you that much. But I will say, what I saw yesterday from Kamaru Usman, he looks like he just continues to get better and better and better every time he steps into that cage. I don't know who beats him. I don't know who beats him right now. He, you know, looking at welterweight right now and seeing what he was able to do to a dominant 170 champion, made a guy look like he didn't belong in here. That was a guy reigning over that division, and he outclassed him in every single way. So, I mean, I got to think everybody's going to that fight sky high. I got to imagine that the odds are going to be highly in Usman's favor, but we'll see. Colby's been doubted a lot. Colby has been doubted a lot in his career. He's been doubted a lot in this entire, you know, championship reign or contendership, top contendership reign, whatever the hell you want to call it. He's been doubted a lot. And I think that people are always surprised with what he can bring to the table once the cage door shuts. But these guys are, look, they're both wrestlers. They both got cardio for days. Kind of looking at, I mean, Kamaru, I would say, is the better striker. but that's not his calling card. You know, striking isn't his calling card. So we'll see. I mean, that's a fun one. I can't wait for the lead up to that fight. And like I said, man, it's kind of harkening back to that old, you know, Black Zillions ATT rivalry, although now the Black Zillions are over there at Hard Knocks 365 and all that, and shout out to them. Great game plan put together. They prepared him to the fullest, and it was a really good night for them. And it's that was a great performance. It felt good for Kamaru too, is, you know, having his daughter in the octagon with him afterwards. That was a really cool moment. You know it meant a lot to him. He's the first African born champion ever in the UFC. That meant a lot to him. And there was a lot of talk, you know, yesterday after the fights of, are they ever going to go to Africa to maybe do a card? And Dana White saying, look, actually, it's super popular over there, so maybe we will see that. That'd be pretty awesome as well. But very, very impressive. Very impressive from Kamaru. Now you're welterweight champion of the world. Tyron talked afterwards. He wants to run it back. I think what's probably best for Tyron is sit it out just a little bit. From this standpoint, I think that when you have a loss like that, it was so lopsided. I'm not talking a lot about, you know, because everybody goes to the standpoint of, well, what was up with Tyron Woodley? I think Kamaru Usman was up with Tyron Woodley. I really do. I don't think this is one of those cases where Woodley didn't bring his best. I think that he got in there with a guy who just matched up perfectly with him and game planned perfectly for him and held him against his will. And so, you know, if Colby ends up losing to Tyron, or if he beats it, I think Colby's the interesting factor here. If Colby ends up winning the belt, I think you obviously can put Tyron right back in there. Those guys have had heat. If Colby doesn't beat Kamaru Usman, they can fight Woodley. That's a fight that's going to have heat no matter what. So I think no matter, I think if I were Tyron, I'd probably just wait, see what goes down, and then see how you can get to Colby Covington, because you've beaten Darren Till. Obviously, he's not going to fight Ben Askren. That's his BFF forever. I can't see him fighting Robbie Lawler. He's knocked out Robbie Lawler cold for the belt, and Robbie's not a guy that everybody's exactly eager to fight. So I can't see that being the case either. But he was a good champ, man. Like, look, Tyron Woodley was a good champion. He is one of the best welterweights we've ever seen, and I wouldn't be surprised if he gets back there, but I don't. After watching yesterday, outside of landing a colossal haymaker or just landing a clean right hand on Kamaru to really just change the balance of the fight and make Kamaru question of going in for a takedown, we saw just utter domination yesterday. So it's hard to look at that matchup from last night and think, you know, there's a path for Woodley to go get that win. Fun night. Fun night at UFC 235. We'll continue on with our recap. Also, a big disappointment in the world of heavyweight boxing as the fans are getting screwed yet again. We'll get to that next.
It's Fighters Fury on AM 790, The Ticket.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Fighters Fury here on The Ticket. I want to make one boxing note because we got a lot of stuff still left to get to with UFC 235, but we got the news this week that we will not be getting the rematch between Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder next. Tyson Fury, of course, if you guys missed last week, he signed with ESPN and Top Rank, and that kind of messed things up because, from what I understand, Showtime was getting ready to release, like, the trailer and the promo for the rematch, and they were completely blindsided by Tyson Fury signing with Bob Arum and ESPN. And look, good for Tyson Fury that he's able to get his money and all that. Fine. But the thing that I found bothersome about it is, you know, Tyson had this whole comeback story where he was talking about money's not everything. This is about legacy. This is about me showing that I'm the best heavyweight of the world. And you go on and you make a move that's completely out of money. And, you know, you're talking about, I don't need the money. I'm going to donate my entire purse to the homeless. All that stuff, and yet we're not getting this fight against Deontay Wilder. And, you know, he comes out afterwards this week, and he's like, well, I didn't want to re-sign with Showtime because they're the ones who screwed me out of this. Which, I'm like, they screwed you out of getting knocked the bleep out in the 12th round? Like, what are you talking about, man? All you had to do, you know, this masterful boxer was like, avoid that super big right hand from Deontay Wilder. It's kind of what everybody has to do when they go against him. But his power is so difference-making that, you know, nobody seemingly can, over a 12-round span, keep themselves off the canvas. So, I get it. Like, I'm with you. I thought you won that fight, too. But if you think that controversy of getting this rematch isn't good for business, like, I don't know what to tell you, man. The only thing I can say about this, and this has been my theory and my belief off of that fight, I think that, and this is very split. A lot of people think that Tyson Fury having that type of data on Deontay Wilder makes it an easier fight for him the next time. I don't. I think the fact that Deontay Wilder has now 12 rounds to know his range, know Tyson Fury's ticks, and know what he can deliver from a damage standpoint, I think the next fight makes it a much more dangerous fight for Tyson Fury, and I think it favors Deontay Wilder. You got to mind, he's not fought a guy of Tyson Fury's size in his entire career, punching up. It's a big difference, and I really do believe, I'm not saying that he's the better boxer, I'm not saying that he's more skilled, but I've said this often with Deontay Wilder, it doesn't matter. Everybody is aware of what his flaws are, but he's so good in this one area. The magic that is in that right hand, it's like Thor touching you, and it doesn't even have to be a full hit, and you go down. It's crazy that Tyson Fury got up and fought back. It was an all-time classic. But here's the thing that I find most disappointing about it. I really felt these two guys were kind of in this post position of, hey, we can make people forget about Anthony Joshua. We're the people's heavyweights right now. We're the ones that are pleasing the fans. We're the ones that the people are going to fork over the money for. I guarantee you, boxing can't find a million pay-per-view buys for a fight. This would have done it. Based off all the buzz of the rematch, all the bleep talking, giving everybody the backstory of it, Tyson Fury saying that there was scandal and bought off officials. This fight was a bona fide mega draw. And now it's just like, you guys are going to do what everybody does. And more so on the Fury side. Like, you're going to go take your ball and go and run. I don't fault fighters for going to want to make their money. But the money was going to be here for this. This was going to make a lot of money. So the fact that he's going to run and hide and say things like, you listen, love, get your name up, and, I'm the true king. All right, if you're the true king, if it was so damn easy, go fight him again. If it was so damn easy, Tyson Fury, go do it. You got to go fight, no disrespect, but like Brian Jennings and, you know, who knows who else on ESPN now. Like, you guys were in this position to take all of the relevancy off of Anthony Joshua, and now Anthony Joshua is fighting the most relevant contender. You guys completely bleeped yourselves. Mostly you, Tyson Fury. Lineal champ, that's nonsense here. I don't want to hear about lineal champ. You could talk about that when you're taking on a legit heavyweight champion. But if you're going to go and be a showcase on ESPN, no. And it should have been next. Because you want to know something? We shouldn't be sitting around here twiddling our thumbs waiting for, I'm going to do a fluffer fight, and then I'm going to, Deontay's going to fight Dominic Brazil, and Tyson Fury's going to fight Jennings, and then maybe they'll fight. No, it should be these two are fighting in May, Anthony Joshua's fighting in June, and then we figure out how the winners fight each other at the end of the year. It's not complex here. It's so easy. And everybody's sitting here and acting like, you got 13 people turning in on DAZN for Anthony Joshua fights. You're just getting a morsel of good success as a pay-per-view draw for these two. You got the opportunity to ride the momentum, ride the wave. And what do? You take your damn surfboard out of the ocean. It's wholly disappointing that this happened. It really is. And look, as a lifelong boxing fan who defends all the good this sport has, This idea that you have all these people chirping in these fighters' ears, acting like,
no, you know, let's get the deal with the ESPN. You'll get more exposure. It's like, exposure for what? You don't think you're going to get the exposure fighting on Showtime or fighting wherever to make this fight happen? And I don't blame Deontay Wilder for like wanting to jump in right in with Bob Arum. That was a sneaky weasel move. You snatched right in and you took a fight away that I thought was going to get announced. How can I do business with that? Not surprising that Bob Arum is around it, though. I'll tell you that much. Anyway, just my little rant. It really pissed me off. It really did. Because I don't care. There's no other Tyson Fury fight that matters to me. He's got two guys that I care about watching him. And that's AJ or Deontay Wilder. Maybe Jarrell Miller down the line because they got some heat. But all of those guys are occupied right now. Because now Wilder's fighting Brazil and Jarrell and AJ are fighting each other. So I don't know who Tyson Fury thinks he's going to fight that everyone's going to be tuning in for. I saw the previous two fights that Tyson Fury fought before Deontay Wilder. They were jokes. Jokes. Honestly, look. You guys know I'll ride or die for this guy, but there's one move that Tyson Fury should pull if he wants people to care about his fights. That's fight Shannon Briggs. These guys have been going back and forth on social media. There's heat already there. He needs somebody who can actually promote him as a fighter and think that it's going to be a fight that's going to bring some action. Because, look, the one thing you also got to say about Tyson Fury, out of AJ and Deontay, whew! That fight style can be boring. Boring. So you need somebody to bring some heat, some personality, because these other matchups ain't got nothing. But if you fight Shannon Briggs, I'll watch your next fight. But I ain't watching anything else, man. I ain't interested. Sorry. I'm not. I'm really not. I'm not. It was such a sneasel move by him and Bob Arum. Like, good for you getting your dough. Props. You know, I hope they put you on First Takes with Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith, and you guys can debate curling or something like that, or whatever, or hurling, whatever the it's hurling, Antoine. I'm sorry, that's what the Irish do. It's like curling, but on grass. It's no doubt that it hasn't lasted. You know, look, the Irish aren't exactly known for inventing sport. Anyway. Let's get into some more from UFC 235 last night. I've said all I have to say on this. Very irritating. Bonuses yesterday. Pedro Munhoz and Cody Garbrandt were named Fight of the Night. Awesome, awesome fight. Pedro Munhoz, wow, what a chin on him. I mean, that was incredible. That was incredible to see. He really took the storm from Cody Garbrandt and hit him with a monster right. Cody goes down. I don't know what happens with Cody now. Look, you know, Dana wasn't down on Cody at all. He's like, look, he got $50,000. It was an amazing emotional fight. And Cody's not getting – he's always having a moment in these fights. But it's three devastating losses. Two to your rival. This was a guy also that outclassed Dominic Cruz. Outclassed him. Popping and locking in the midst of the fights. That's how comfortable he was with his striking. I'm like, you don't want to say to a guy, hey, where is, you need to be that guy. Because it feels so, it feels so obvious. Like, you got to be more calculated. You got to be more measured. You know, he's a savage. But I think we do have to be worried with Cody because it feels like that chin is just taking a licking right now. It really is getting beat badly. He's taken some savage losses. And mind you, with Cody, this is a guy who took a complete year off because of concussion issues. So he's a guy who's already been worried about the durability of his head before. That was bothersome. That was bothersome to see him lose like that. Shout out to Pedro Munhoz. Really good win for him. That division's in a weird spot right now because they want to seemingly do the TJ Henry Cejudo rematch, which I don't think they should do. I didn't want the fight in the first place. And Marlon Moraes, I mean, if anybody deserves a title shot, he does. And quite frankly, look, if TJ wants to do this thing where he's going to go fight Henry Cejudo at 125 again, he's got to drop the belt. I'm sorry. You know, he got to do his little fantasy ride, and he got to, you know, starve his body, and, you know, he took a clip from a 125er and went down like a sack of potatoes. In my mind, if he's going to go do that, he should vacate the title. I'm not, you know, one to make guys do that a bunch, but it seems silly. Like, you're going to go try and get one right on Henry Cejudo, and you're going to hold up this division with guys who are deserving of title shots. They really are. Oh, they just showed on SportsCenter, by the way, Johnny Walker, who also looked amazing yesterday. Shout out to Johnny Walker. He is very impressive, but he did hurt himself doing the worm. Yeah, he hurt his shoulder doing the worm in celebration. He hurt himself because his victory was so quick doing the worm. I don't have much time left, so I want to get into the Ben Askren, Robbie Lawler thing. So Ben Askren finally makes his UFC debut, and it's great that he's there. He's a good personality. He's got animosity with the boss, and he can seemingly get under the skin of anybody in there, right? And not known as the most exciting dude in the world, that's why he really wasn't in there. I think the quote from Dana White was, Ambien takes Ben Askren to go to sleep. I think that was the quote on him. But they were selling him high. The broadcast crew was selling him high. Joe Rogan was talking about how he campaigned and had him on his podcast to get him there. It's cool to have Ben Askren in the UFC. It was good. I felt good for him seeing that. He's also taking on Robbie Lawler, who, for my money, is my favorite fighter. I love Robbie Lawler. Robbie Lawler is an OG. He has given you so many thrills as a fight fan. He's excellent. And so that was my pick. I'm not picking against Robbie Lawler. It's kind of like one of my cardinal rules. I don't pick against Robbie Lawler when it comes to fights. And so he comes out of this. He comes out of the gate. Ben Askren going right for the takedown. And Robbie Lawler, he picks him up WWE style and throws him right on his head. Then Ben Askren, with his arm trapped on him, he is taking some bombs right to the face. He gets up. I don't know how he got up. I don't know how he got up. Maybe it's just that giant dome that he's got for a head, or that beautiful head of hair. I don't know. I don't know how he survived that, but he did. And somehow weathered the storm. Robbie was about to go and pick him up and slam him again, but Ben Askren now is in his wheelhouse. Now he's got him up against the cage. This is where Ben Askren lives. So they get to this position where Ben puts a bulldog choke on, Robbie Lawler, and he has his arm kind of on Ben's head, like he was trying to push down his neck, and it falls. It could be mistaken that it went limp, for sure. I think a lot of us watching live are like, oh, shoosh. Did that just go limp? Is he out? But, you know, Ben doesn't really have it doesn't look like he fully has the choke on. And, you know, Herb Dean's kind of looking, and he's asking, I guess, Robbie Lawler, is he okay? And it looks like Robbie does give him the thumbs up, but I don't know if Herb was blocked off or what. So he waves it off. He thinks Robbie's out. And Robbie just is like up and be like, what do you mean no? What? So you feel horrible. Like, Herb Dean completely bleeped up. And it was rough. Like, that's one of those ones with replay. Like, this guy's not out. We shouldn't call this fight. I know that, you know, the look of the arm going limp was a bad look. Or the arm dragging down was a bad look. But, you know, I feel like you would have gotten a little bit more give on Robbie if that would have been the case. So it's a bummer. Robbie Lawler loses that way. Ben Askren wins that way, which is kind of appropriate. I thought Ariel Helwani put it well when he said that's an appropriate way for Ben Askren to get his win, with some controversy in his UFC debut, which we never thought would get here. Afterwards, they said, you know, does he want to fight Robbie Lawler again? He does not. He wants to go fight the winner of Masvidal Till. He's flying to London. Robbie wants to run it back. Dana wants to run it back. I don't think they should run it back. Out of all the matchups, I thought that Robbie was kind of like, I just think you're misusing Ben Askren if you're going to go in there and put him with the Robbie fight. It turned out to be an amazing fight, and I wish we would have gotten more of it. So I guess that's enough to promote it as far as the rematch is concerned. But I do want to see the antagonist of Ben Askren roll out here and see what he's got to offer. And I think him versus Till will be fantastic. Him versus Jorge, who's very close with Robbie, I think that would be fun as well. You know that Jorge Masvidal is going to engage in any kind of nonsense that Ben Askren has to offer. But, yeah, rough night for Herb Dean. It was bad. I thought, you know, he did better with the controversy that went on in the main event, and he took the 2 points from Bones Jones, but that was also, he kind of got a save from Anthony Smith not wanting the fight to end from that standpoint as well. Bad night for the officiating, for sure. That was our show, man. It was a fun night, UFC 235. I'm trying to see, did I miss anything of huge note? Zabit beat Jeremy Stephens. Looked pretty damn good. Did gas out a little bit in the final round. And shout out to Diego Sanchez, beating Mickey Gall. He beat the little whippersnapper and showed him what's what when it comes to cardio. So there was that as well. So shout out to him. So that's the show, man. That's what we'll leave you with. If you missed any of the show, download the podcast. It's available on the radio.com app. You can subscribe there. All new episodes are sent to your phone, as well as on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are available. Just look up Fighters Fury, and you guys can get it there. And bada bing, bada boom, that's the show.